Scripture reading this morning is from Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man.
Subject of this morning's sermon is work ethics. It's a subject that probably is vitally needed nowadays. See the way sometimes the nation is going. More and more people are feeling entitled to certain things and begin to slough off on that work ethic. I remember even from my parents' day, and I still see it in older folks, they don't consider themselves entitled to anything. They do not ask for anything. In fact, a lot of times they'd rather die than ask for any favors or any handouts or whatever. They have that old pioneer spirit of wanting to do it themselves. And it's one of the things that God has tried to instill in us from what was just read by Phil in the proverb of the ant. I've seen on the internet a modification of this. I knew there was an old cartoon of the ant and the grasshopper. It shows the grasshopper kind of sloughing off and the ant working through. And then it talks about the modification about the grasshopper, I guess, being subsidized by the government, and the government taking more of the work of the ant away, giving it to the grasshopper. And before you know it, they're both starving to death during the winter. And so it does have its problems. But one of the main characteristics of the Christian should distinguish them and should be evident is their work ethics. And as we look at it, just looking at some things that might be qualified as part of work ethics are things like healthy and productive work habits, trustworthiness, honesty, dependability, goal setting, anticipation of need. If you need some sort of example of this, it goes through all through life. Let's start you off as children, in the home, and as you relate to the family, especially your parents. Did you have healthy and productive habits? Did you wash behind your ear? Did you take your bath every day, or at least every Saturday, or whatever it was when it was necessary or felt necessary? There were things that were required of you, like to wash your hands or whatever before a meal. Those are healthy habits to get into. Trustworthiness. Were you given tasks to do and expected, and you did carry them out? Honesty. If you were asked a question, did you tell mom and dad the truth? Or did you lie through your teeth? Blame it on your little brother or something, whatever. Dependability, the goal setting. As you go to school, you have tests coming up. Did you study for them, whatever? That's some sort of goal. In the long run, you understand you're being equipped to go out into the world. But in anticipation of needs here, kind of home in on this, As a young person in a home, you had chores. Now, did you have to be told every week for how many years? The trash had to go out, the lawns had to be mowed, whatever. Every week? Seriously? Or did you begin to anticipate the parents wanted this stuff done? And you went ahead and did it without being told. Now, bring these things up. Also, the self-motivation, imagination to get the work done. You know, can you improvise if the tools aren't quite there, and whatever the desire to excel, to be a better person? I mean, it all fits together. But as you start as a child, this should go into, you know, the workplace when you get your first job. You know, as it moves into other things, I mean, it's all part of preparing you for life, but beyond life. As it takes you beyond the workplace into retirement, you know, is this work ethic taking you into, you know, a retirement phase of service to God? I mean, there are jobs where it's required for you to anticipate people's needs. If you're a butler, a manservant, or whatever, or if you're a general's aide, I mean, you've been doing it long enough, you realize, you know, there's certain format, there's a certain habit, there's certain things that have to be prepared, be made ready. You know, you can't wait to the last minute. In fact, you know, a very good person, a general's aide, anticipates or looks to the future and has it all laid out before he's even told to. At that point, he's ready for promotion. But this is all preparing us for service to God, because God can't sit there and directly tell you to do things. You have to read it for yourself and to be able to look and anticipate what God needs from us in order as we serve Him in this life. And the needs are going to be different for each of us. As we see in our own individual efforts, you know, an opportunity come up, we're going to have to apply ourselves to it. Are we ready to do that? Do we have the self-motivation, the desire, the imagination, you know, the anticipation of God's needs to carry this thing out? Have we matured to that point yet? Work ethics marks a Christian, strong Christian, a matured Christian. Now, introduction to excuses. Got part of your hand out, I've just rearranged things. Because we're moving into an age of excuses, and people think they have excuses, the entitlements we've talked about. In fact, people really do think, you know, the world owes them a living. But what I'd like to do is show you that these excuses have always been around, even from the first century. In fact, we're going to pull our examples from the first century and show you it was even worse in the first century. And in the middle of the first century, and even far worse excuses, God still taught work ethics. Right? Now, you can say, well, why work? The government's going to take my taxes anyway. And if you haven't got this sort of mindset yet, then, you know, you young people, you haven't started the workplace yet. You get this the first time you get a paycheck. And especially now that the minimum wage in some states now has gone up to like $10 an hour. Okay? And you're expecting at the end of the week to have a check for $400. And you look at it and you go, what's FICA? And realize half my paycheck is gone. Welcome to the government. They just took half of it, at least. Now that Obamacare has kicked in, and to give you health insurance when you probably absolutely don't need it for another 30 years, welcome to the big time. Notice Luke 19. Okay, this is Zacharias. When he's talking, you know, Jesus is calling him to be a disciple. And he goes, now he is noted as not just a tax gatherer, but a chief tax gatherer. And this guy is rich. How did he get there? Well, the people wanted to be tax gatherers because you could get rich. It's a job, in most cases, that you went to the government and you said, let me collect the taxes for you. And you paid for that privilege. Because you could, whatever taxes you collected, you could keep anything over what the government expected. So if you had a nice little strong arm crew, you could get some pretty hefty taxes and keep most of it. But this is what Zacchaeus said. Yeah, half my wealth I will give to you. Okay? And if I have cheated anyone, I'll give back four times. But you know what's kind of going on here. Yeah, it's a possibility. Or just confiscated in any way. First century. In Hebrews, you know, it talks about they went and Christians visited friends that had been jailed, and because they visited them, the government came and confiscated all their belongings. Yeah. Why work if the government's going to take it all? They had a better excuse than we do now. But still, they're required to have a strong work ethic. They're not paying me what I'm worth. Yeah, I mean, I've heard this in the workplace, and so yeah, a lot of times employees use this to rip off the company, you know, steal the supplies, what have you. Nobody ever feels like they're being paid what they're worth. But you agree to a certain price when you signed up. Man, you are glad to get the job at the time. God covers this in another place, but right now, what does John the Baptist tell the soldiers that come in their repentance? Yeah, just be content with your wages. I mean, generally, soldiers get paid less than normal citizens. Be content with your wages. Don't coerce the citizenry. You know, they have certain privileges there. Or James 5:4. That's an interesting one there, where in a time where people were paid, and a lot of times what they were paid was what they subsisted off of that day. A lot of times your paycheck will sometimes last you a couple of days or a week or maybe a month or something like that. But if they didn't get paid that day, they didn't eat that day. That was that critical. And so they needed to be told, you know, this person, if they gave you an honest day's work, you pay them. And that, a lot of that was going on. That's why you'll find also, even as far back as Jeremiah, we have a neighbor come over and help you, and then you don't pay him for his help. You know, people have always been nasty. We're in that kind of world. Okay, but don't let it affect you. We're being treated like slaves. Guess what? First century, 80% of the population were slaves. Of course they were treated like slaves. They were. In the book of Philemon, we have here a case of an individual who was a slave, Onesimus, who met Paul. Paul converted him, and now Paul has given him a letter to take back to Philemon to let him know, hey, you had a rebellious slave, I've converted him, he's going back, and I can guarantee he's going to be a good slave now. In fact, this is why Ephesians and Colossians talk about that period of time of Christians who were slaves and how they conduct themselves as slaves. Not just as workers or employees, but the kind of attitude they should have as slaves. We're going to kind of end up with this one because Paul makes a good point. But, you know, they had the excuse back then. Why give the guy, you know, everything when I've been coerced into this to begin with? But during the first century, some of the most interesting people were slaves. Socrates, Aristotle, you know. They didn't let it get to them. They realized, oh, this is the state of things. Give them my best. Right? The rich are greedy and need to pay their fair share. There's always going to be rich. Jesus says, you poor, you'll always have with you. There's always going to be a difference. You're never going to have an equality. It doesn't work that way. And how do you determine what's fair? The way God handles it, Paul tells the rich Christian, 1 Timothy 6, to remember the poor, you know, to share with those that have need. Now, he puts it in their lap. You do the right thing. I'm leaving it up to you. It's not up to really the government to make that decision. But if they take it from you, it's legal theft. And it's really not fair. You work for it. Okay. Someone is going to steal it anyway. So why bother to work for it? We're into the story of the Samaritan on Wednesday night. And the Samaritan is there to help this poor man. Now, why is this a poor man? He just got robbed. Now, in this day and age, you know, there's a lot of theft, identity theft, what have you. But back then, robbery was the chief thing. Makes sense. You know, it's a little easier to take something from somebody when they can't fight back. They're out cold on the road. Or to not leave any witnesses. More practical. And that's what this man was. Robbed, stripped of his clothes, everything, possessions, and left for dead. That's how the Samaritan found him. Or, Paul says, 2 Corinthians 11:26, says, as an apostle, in my journeys, whatever, dangers of countrymen, whatever, dangers of oceans, you know, whatever, shipwreck, dangers of robbers. Always the danger. But Paul is the one that's going to give us a lot of the work ethics. So the excuses are always there. They had them, I reiterate, they had them in the first century. They're even more stronger in the first century. But still, Christians were required to have good, strong, dependable work ethics. Scriptural advice, whatever your hand finds to do, verily do it with all your might. That's from Ecclesiastes. You might say such advice is well and good, but we do seem to be sheep in the midst of wolves. How does a Christian survive in a world without taking on its characteristics? How do you swim with sharks without becoming a shark? Actually, the answer is that the Christian fares better than wolves whose techniques are often short-sighted. Yeah, they may work in the short term, but often in the long term they do not. Some examples. Okay, so you're making, you know, this exuberant minimum wage, and someone said, well, I'd like to get rich quick. And so they sit down, they're going to commit a robbery. And to them, a one-time thing to endanger themselves and others, they may have a haul that looks impressive, $10,000. You know, buys a lot of stuff on the street. Minimum wage, add it up. You make that much in half a year. And nobody's going to come looking for you. You probably got benefits to go along with it. Probably good benefits is you're still living in, you know, making minimum wage and still living at home, probably going to school. You're not running. The criminal is not exactly the smartest person in the world. All they sacrifice for a short haul is not worth it for someone even working at bare minimum can outstrip them in income very easily. Plus, as someone once said, the worst thing about crime is the company you have to keep. Bad government usually implodes. That's what we've learned from socialism from the mid-1800s. It may look successful for a while. You know, you put everybody on the dole and you promise them anything and you can get the vote, but at some point you got to make good on those promises. And when you fleece the rich and there's nothing else to give, the main problem of changing history, as a lot of politicians and people do, is that they forget the reality of history. In the French Revolution, they got rid of the middle class, and all they had was this enormous poor class who had nothing else to lose. And the rich are a very small segment of society, and they're very noticeable. They kind of stand out. Have you ever been to France and the Palace of Versailles? Man, it's a gaudy nugget in the middle of nowhere. No, the poor knew where to go in order to get whatever they needed violently. Some people just don't learn. The Christian's physical and mental health is usually far better. Christian sleeps at night. Bible talks about that. Got a clear conscience. And there's also the eternal reward that the Christian has. That's often overlooked. In this day and age, with identity theft, trends in government reversal, new jobs are being created all over the place. Yeah, it's as more and more people think yet to cheat on your resume. Yeah, Corona High School, it was in the news this last week. About 30 students decided to tap into the school's computers and change their grades. I mean, that goes back to the 60s and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. They thought they were being clever. How do we know that 30 students broke into the computers? They weren't that smart. They left a trail. So now we got companies growing up to help us against identity theft, computer fraud, whatever. One of the things that I've noticed the last couple of weeks, as a segment of the cooking shows and then restaurant enhancing, there's two more shows that have kind of cropped up where somebody goes in and puts cameras in the restaurants and they watch the employees. And they say who's being a good employee and who's lying, who's ripping off the boss, who's scamming the customers, whatever. You can't believe it. They've created a new industry in security. Okay? It only goes so far before you get a backlash. And God's been trying to tell us this for a long time. When Paul writing to the Thessalonians, now he bent over backwards to give them a good example. He said, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with labor and hardship we kept working night and day so that we might not be a burden to any of you." Some of the congregations that Paul was working with were struggling. We said a lot of them were slaves. Didn't want to be a burden to them. Notice the rest of this. Not because we did not have the right to do this. God had given them the right to make a living off of preaching. But there's also gainsayers at the time. People that went out and through false religions or just blathering, they were eloquent speakers. There's always been that through history. That was the thing before we had cable. People used to go to the courtrooms and listen to the Daniel Websters and the Clarence Darrells and whatever because they were extraordinary orators. Sometimes they didn't say anything, but they were just fun to listen to. They had good stories, they made good comments, they made good points. Okay, in Paul's time, the same thing. Arguing points of religion or philosophy or whatever. They made big money off of it. And Paul didn't want to be identified with that. He wasn't there to make money from what he was doing. He was there to preach the gospel. And so he decided to give them an example of good work ethics. But in order to offer ourselves as a model to you that you might follow our example, we work so that you should work. The good, strong work ethic. For even when we were with you, we used to give you this order, if anyone will not work, neither let him eat. good commandment for today. It was a good commandment when this country started. One of our first colonies, as it began, you know, tried to put in the first crop and stuff like that, the governor kind of said, well, you know, even those that don't work, you know, we'll still take care of you. Well, guess what they thought? Well, why should we work if they're going to take care of us anyway? They almost starved to death the first winter. I remember in history class, the teacher getting up and going, well, this is what the governor said to the people. If you don't work, you won't eat. She wasn't even aware he was reading to them from Scripture, but they were pilgrims. They brought the Bible with them. What he was doing was quoting Paul, going, hey, forget this socialism. We're back to square one here in good, strong work ethics. That colony only survived the next year because when they found out you don't eat, if you don't work, they all pitched in. And it took off. Impressive examples. Because the other part of all this equation is, it's not just techniques and principles and things. How much is God active in your life as a Christian? This work ethic is something He's looking at in your life to see what you're doing and whether He's going to be a part of it. So how bad is your life? Let's start with Joseph. His family sold him out. His brothers, well, his older brother, taking pity on him, instead of letting him die in a pit, sold him to a caravan who took him to Egypt as a slave. Okay, here he is, a slave in the most powerful nation, tucked away over beyond a desert, away from family. What you going to do? Here's a man of God doing the best he can with God's help. Starts out as a slave, God working things, he makes sure he's put in Potiphar's house. With Potiphar's help, he made him an overseer in his house and over all that he owned. He became trustworthy. Those things we talked about, worth ethics, trustworthy, honest, you know, looking ahead, fixing things when they were needed. Potiphar was impressed with him. He made Potiphar wealthy. And so Potiphar said, go for it. It was the woman that messed it up, Potiphar's wife. Now, we don't hear too much about that, but you got to figure, you know, even after Potiphar got rid of Joseph, you know, things probably started going downhill after that. Probably the wife wasn't as well off after that as well. Her sins would have found her out. But let's stick with Joseph. Now he's in jail. Gone from being a slave to being in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, extended kindness to it. And the chief jailer liked him. Gave him head over the jail. Was impressed with him enough to comment on some of the things that Joseph did and said, some of the dreams that God gave him, interpretation of them, and made mention into government circles. I mean, here's a man that went into a foreign land as a slave, and through good habits, work ethics, and God on his side, rose up to be second in position of the most powerful nation in the world. Pharaoh said, you're over everything except me in this. I was talking to one of the members this last week about God's providence in this. This could never have happened without God's help. For one thing, nobody could have done. Could this have happened to? Because the Pharaohs were a very tight line of family group. It's like the house of Pharaoh, father to son to grandson, what that kind of stuff. You don't interrupt the line. It went from dynasty to dynasty. Joseph would never have been able to fit in. How did it happen? Well, historians speculate that somewhere in here, some of the marauding tribes out into the eastern desert actually made a raid on Egypt and won and interrupted that dynasty procession. And it was the Hyksos that were in power during the time that Joseph was there. And they made it possible for Joseph to become second in command of Egypt with God's help. He's not the only one. Daniel. Here's Daniel, a young man, teenager, with others, taken captive from his native Israel, taken into Babylon, the most powerful nation in the world at that time, and did not forsake his God, stayed true to his religious principles, and God was with him. With Daniel, it said, he began to distinguish himself among the commissioners and the satraps, those the rulers. You know, now, Babylon was growing. It was a pretty big nation at this time. You know, one of the seven wonders of the world came out of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar was a king of kings. Possessed an extraordinary spirit. Evidence of God with him. Now, the others didn't like it, and so they tried to find something wrong with Daniel's career, his thinking, his work habits, whatever, so that, you know, they could get rid of him. But it's interesting, they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption as much as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. He was obviously not a member of a current political party in the United States. Often the best armor you can wear is your honesty, integrity, and your lack of corruption. With Daniel, an exceptional individual, when the Persians took over, and I've never heard of anybody ever doing this in the course of history, when the Persians took over, they found in Daniel an individual who could now run their empire. And they gave him the same position. The Persian Empire ran something over 1,500 miles, far bigger than the Babylonian Empire, something that even impressed Alexander the Great. It was off his maps. To have such a confidence in a person that was a stranger and a captive. They saw in Daniel someone exemplary. And not to be taken out of office, but to be fed anything he wanted. Because they knew he could do the job. They did not have that confidence in anybody else. At the end of the Persian Empire, they found this characteristic among the Jews. It was said of Mordecai. All the accomplishments of his authority and strength and the full account of the greatness of Mordecai, they're recorded in the Chronicles. He also had good, strong work ethics and a trust in God. And that kind of brings us into the New Testament. Paul to the Ephesians. Again, it wasn't just, we looked previously at Thessalonians, but now to the Ephesians. You know, so Paul wasn't just a one congregation. You know, that's the only place he did this. He did this wherever he went. Give us an example. I have coveted no one's silver or gold or clothes. You know, you yourselves know that these hands ministered to my own needs and to the men who were with me. In everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak. And remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, that it is better to give than to receive. To the Ephesians, he wrote Ephesians 4:28, he that stole, steal no longer, but rather let him labor with his hands, that he might have extra to give to those who have need. We'll get to chapter 6 in a moment. 1 Thessalonians 2:9, back to Thessalonians. More spiritual application. Not just, you know, we've been talking physical work, but also in, you know, we talked about, where's this taking us? Into our spiritual labors. And that's where Paul took it also. For you recall, brethren, our labor and hardship, how working night and day, so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. They worked equally hard in the gospel. Work during the day, making tents, working in leather and stuff, and at night, preaching all night. Going house to house. Doing what was necessary. To the Corinthians, if others share the right over you, do we not more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right. Paul says, I could have made a living just preaching the gospel. He could have done that. He had that right. That's what he calls it. But he said, you know, we endure all things that we may cause no hindrance to the gospel. That was uppermost. Not to just to give an example of a good, strong work ethic, to make sure that nobody said anything bad about the gospel. He worked so that the gospel shine, the word of God shine, that the messengers of God shine, that nobody had anything bad to say about them. They could hang nothing on them, that they were doing it for greed or status or whatever. How could they? Paul's making his own way. What then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge. That was his own little thing. Paul said, this is my greatest reward that I can give God back. Although he is willing to pay me to preach the gospel, what I can do for him is go, no, I'd rather do it for free. I mean, you gave your son for me. You've given me this wonderful work that saves souls. You give me the greatest purpose on earth. How can I charge you for it? Especially all I owe you since I started off persecuting Christians. Ephesians 6, back to slaves. Now, we still have the opportunity, if you don't like your boss, go get another job. Go to night school. Get a degree, whatever. You can always better yourself. You can excel. That's a good, strong work ethic. Don't sit there and grumble. Don't give the guy a day's work. Give him 2 days' work. I admire a lot of Christians I know who went in and gave more than 100% every day. And you're going to get the flack for it. A lot of times you're not going to get kudos. Your fellow workers, in school, if you're making, going to AP classes and making straight A's, there's a lot of slackers in the class that go, goody two-shoes, they're making C minus D's, whatever, and they're going to give you a hard time. You may even get beat up every once in a while. Or you're in the workplace and you're making other people look bad. But you're helping the boss. You're helping the company. You're shining for God. If you can't change your situation, what Paul gives us is an insight. You can change yourself. Work then not as eye service or men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ. Doing the will of God from the heart, with good will render service as unto the Lord. Change your own attitude. If it's menial, if it's whatever, it's backbreaking, if you're getting no kudos from your boss and what you're doing, well, you're not working for him. You're working for God. You're working for your Lord. At the end of the day, that God is going to pay you more than what you had to suffer through. He's promised that. You know that. That's what the Christian has over anybody else. And I can tell you from experience, nothing stays static. It will not remain forever. Things change. Something will open the boss's eyes. Something will happen to the company. Something will take off. Something will transform. People will change. Situations will change. God will pull out something. He's the real force and factor behind all these things. He provides the opportunities. He provides the resources. He provides the help in time of need. That's what the Christian knows. That's where we have it over everybody else in this world. This is what drives us in a real strong work ethic. Because we know we're making a difference in families, in communities, in workplace, in nations, in churches. It's got to be there. Ron at the Lord's Supper this morning, talk from James 1, looking at the Word and being a doer of the Word and not a hearer only. A lot of times, the invitation, it almost becomes its own little short sermon. So I'll try to make it brief. Put your work ethic, to work and get your concordance or whatever, or just go through, the Scriptures and find out what God says will save you. It could be either look up the words in a concordance of save, saved, salvation, whatever, all the buzzwords, and look up all the passages where you find those and find out what it says, what God says is necessary for salvation. Or you can go through the book of Acts, and we've done this in the past. I know Ron took us through one of those in his study of Acts. There's 8, maybe 9 cases where you find people are converted through the gospel. Find out what happened that got them converted. Generally, we find it's the 5 steps. They heard the gospel, they believed it, they repented of their life, they confessed Christ as their Lord, and they were baptized to have their sins washed away. And then from there, they got encouraged through the Scriptures to keep serving their Lord faithfully. If there's anything we can do to help you anywhere along those progressive steps, please let us know as we stand to sing.